The Process, a podcast about creativity and experimental music. In the world of experimental music, outcomes and accolades for creators can be uncertain and at times seem far and few between. Therefore, creators and practitioners of experimental music must embrace the one thing they will always have complete control over, the process. This podcast aims to understand this creative process by listening to new works and discussing them with their creators. Each episode focuses on one creator and their music. Understanding how and why they create can inform aspiring creatives and help audiences better understand and navigate experimental music. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and I'll be your host as we explore the world of experimental music, creativity, and the human need to find purpose in their world and lives. This is The Process. Welcome back to another episode of The Process. So today, we're speaking with Noah Wall in his new album, Speech Patterns, on Chalkin Records. And it's, of course, as the title suggests, it's about speech patterns. It's interesting, Noah is going to explain his process of how he's gone and actually taken these famous orators and different texts and religious speakers and even politicians filibusting, takes all these different types of speeches and speech patterns and, you know, uses the computer to do some analysis and some interpretation, as well as just some good old basic MIDI to sort of recreate or translate the undulations and fluctuation of speech into musical notes or data that can be interpreted in a musical way. And he talks a lot about how he goes about this process. And I think it's always interesting when, you know, he talks about using the software Melodyne, which, if you don't know much about it, it's a pitch correction software. It's not so much like AutoTune where it, you know, it just basically does some fast Fourier transforms to basically identify, you know, what pitch is happening and, you know, can impose then a certain key or a certain, you know, pitch value onto what, you know, has come in almost automatically. But with Melodyne, there's a lot of like process and sort of, there's a whole art form to being really good at sort of tuning or, you know, fixing, making small adjustments to a performance. And, you know, so that's been something that's been used in commercial and pop culture for, you know, at least a decade, if not longer. But I think it's always interesting when sort of, you know, experimental artists or creatives go and just hijack a very useful tool to maybe do something a little bit different. You know, it's one thing to create this really amazing tool that no one's used before and, or, you know, come up with your own code or your own, you know, sort of invention, or even, you know, we talk about people building their own instruments, which is all really cool. And we love talking about that on the show, but I think it's really interesting when somebody uses like an industry standard tool in a provocative or in a different way. So without further ado, let's listen to the opening track, Bell, from the album Speech Patterns, released everywhere and available everywhere now on Chalkin Records. Thank you.
I guess, first of all, a lot of other projects I've done have in some way used speech or text as sort of source material, which is then treated differently across different projects. So it is kind of a theme, you know, that I've worked with a lot. Specifically for this project, I feel like the initial inspiration was I had just lost a dear friend, an amazing musician himself, Michael Evans. It's been almost 2 years now. And he used to leave these incredibly musical, very long voicemails. It was just like something he did. Yeah. And, you know, it was one of those, he would usually get cut off by the machine, you know. And I feel like when everyone else had stopped leaving voicemails, he was still, you know, doubling down, basically.
So was he like singing? When you say musical, was he singing? Was he performing
in some
way?
No, just checking. Yeah, checking in, maybe asking for some Pro Tools advice. just really mundane stuff, but like stretched out and very like musical and lots of... Yeah. He was a percussionist himself, and I think his voice is very percussive out there. And so I was looking back, and I had this collection of, you know, 20 voicemails. And I was like, is there anything I can do with these?
Yeah.
To sort of, you know, turn them into some kind of project or, you know, and that's really where it started. And there's just one of those that made it in the end, to the 11 tracks, you know, that are on Speech Patterns.
Right.
But that was the initial inspiration. And I would say the rest of the tracks, you know, each one somehow mirrors the source material that, you know, it was generated from.
Right. So is that specifically the voicemail track, that title track? Was that the one that came from these voicemails?
It is. And there used to be maybe five other voicemail tracks, and I kind of pared it down. And it's one of the sort of most simply orchestrated. It's just a Rhodes organ. But you can still hear the kind of careening, you know, nature of his voice, I think. And so,
well, it feels very stripped down, like you mentioned, and then there is like this kind of contrapuntal thing that's happening within it.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's something about your process or if that was just the way you said those voicemails were very musical, so maybe that was just inherent in those voicemails.
It is, and to be honest at this point, it's hard to distinguish what's coming from me versus the original source material, but I you know, because it changed along the way, and the songs are not sort of note for note mirrors of the voices. They've been orchestrated and quantized, and you know, so but yeah, it's funny. I mean, I obviously have a closer relationship with the source material than the average listener, so I can still hear it in there.
Thank you.
I sort of set out to find, you know, a collection of different voice recordings, after, you know, Michael's being the first, but of people that were not me, you know, already pre-recorded. And the only thing they really did have in common would be, I guess, just showing like what humans, what the crazy things humans do with voices, you know, which is way more than just communicating. And it's, I feel like it's a tool we all have and we use more than we realize. And we're all sort of experts at it, some more than others, I guess. But
yeah, it's an enculturated thing too, where like just we learn tone and pacing can have this huge influence, where I feel like teaching a musician that, you know, or like taking lessons and learning that, you would spend years in a conservatory practicing that type of stuff that we sort of know naturally, you know, through enculturation with our voices. Yeah.
And I guess if you think about it, something we've, what is that silly kind of rule about you do something 10,000 times, you're an expert. True. I guess if that's true, we're all sort of experts at,
Well, we have to be, right? Because we needed to get food at some point, right? So we had to communicate to people that we were hungry. Yeah.
And if we do it louder or, you know, faster, maybe it has a different
result. It's more urgent.
So, yeah. And all those things are sort of musical in a way.
So you have these voices then, and they're, you know, they're pre-recorded. They're either voicemails from your dear friend, or they're, you know, pre-recorded, you know, speech patterns. And so you put these in some type of DAW, and then where do you go from there?
The first thing I would do was sort of convert a lot of the source material, which was YouTube videos, to just audio, you know, to convert it to a WAV file. And then I ran those through this app called Melodyne, which I think a lot of people use. And I think it's very popular, actually, for auto-tuning vocals, you know, in pop music and things like
that. Yeah, and there's nothing auto about it. It you have to go through note by note and kind of adjust everything. But you can do that, which is helpful.
You can do that. And it does, it's crazy how fast it, you know, lets you do that. But the sort of middle step of auto-tuning anything in this app is the conversion of, you know, whatever audio you feed into it, into essentially MIDI. And at that point is probably when it most resembles the speech. You know, you could really hear like every little pause and the notes, and it was sort of the rawest state, I would say. And I, you know, I feel like from there, once you have the MIDI, you know, this string of notes for 30 minutes, you know, anyone with their hands on that could make a composition out of it, and they would probably all be different. I think, you know, it's just sort of open source at that point.
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times we talk to people on the show about the biggest, like, not hurdle, but one of the challenges they face in the process is just getting sort of source material, or sort of, you know, clay to mold. Here you've got these sounds now, or you've got these speech patterns now MIDI-fied or in MIDI. So where do you go from there then? Is it, do you open up a, you know, software instrument, or do you, is there more analysis that you do at that point?
Not too much more analysis, but I think, you know, from there I use Logic and GarageBand to a lot in the beginning, to just sort of extrapolate that MIDI into different tracks with different instrumentation, sort of layering them on top of one another. And for everything, I try to make every sound on the album somehow linked back to, you know, a sentence or a word or a phrase or whatever. And I did sort of pick out sections that made the most sense within, because, you know, 30 minutes of this MIDI note, there's pieces that could be cut out and edited.
So were there any hard and fast rules, like quote unquote rules, that you had where you're saying, I'm not going to do this, or I'll only do this? And was that like, did you have rules for the whole album, or on certain tracks, did you kind of tie one hand behind the back or say, okay, on this one, I'm not going to do this, or I will do this?
That's a funny question. I would say in the beginning, there were a lot more rules than in the end. And those help just, I feel like just to get it to that pure state in the beginning, I had to have some rules. Yeah. And then from there, I could kind of really play with it and defile it.
Absolutely.
But I mean, the biggest thing was just that everything in some way should be linked back to the source material.
Because you could get obsessed with that, right? Like it has to be true to the original, you know, speech pattern.
Yes. And there were versions of the entire album, really, that sounded, I would say, more like that. Mm-hmm. And it went through several iterations where I just sort of completely scrapped the orchestrations of the MIDI that I had and started over. And really just tried to, I mean, if you've ever worked with MIDI, you know, there's a lot of, it's like having a computer with, you know, 95% bad fonts on it that you never want to use.
They're all dingbats. Like, yeah. All dingbats or wingbats or whatever the font is. Yeah.
Comic Sans or something. Exactly.
Yeah. Comic Sans.
So that was just, you know, just kind of finding the best, something that didn't sound awful. And I, one thing that helped a lot was maintaining the, I guess, the volume of each MIDI note. I feel like as soon as those are all made the same volume or sort of quantized in that way, it really loses a lot of the speech cadence and feel and becomes very robotic. So, you know, keeping some things like that helped counter the MIDI-ness of it. And I really liked that when you're listening to it, it's clear that it's kind of artificial and maybe these aren't real instruments, but there is something in there that you know is human. And I think or hope maybe that is the voice, you know, the initial recording kind of peeking through. So Bell is the source material for that one is the author Bell Hooks. Basically just talking on like a public access kind of, you know, TV interview from I think the late 90s maybe. I don't have a lot to say about how I got from that to this particular instrumentation. I think in the end, it just made sense as a way to start the album off, kind of, you know, the way it sounded, seemed like a good opener. And I think there's also, you hear a lot of sounds from the yard of the house that I recorded the album in, in the beginning, which I think it's birds talking, kind of works with this speech idea.
Yeah, no, you definitely hear like some environmental sounds and birds. Yeah, definitely.
And you hear those throughout. Yeah. And as a side note about that, I think one observation I had is, you know, everyone thinks you hear birds in the yard. It's so pretty. And it is. Yeah. But really what you're hearing is, you know, the most violent shrieks of warning and protest. And, you know.
Yeah, get out of my tree. Like this last warning. We hear the songbird singing a beautiful melody, and it's really, you know, get out of my backyard or get out of my house. Yeah,
exactly.
That is, I never really thought about that, but
so
that is
pretty.
Yeah, but it's beautiful. Yeah. It's a home invasion, but we're hearing it as
like many overlapping home invasions. Yeah. Right. there in spirit. Aside from the instrumentation, that one actually slowly speeds up. So over the course of 4 minutes, the tempo, you know, goes up 100 BPM or whatever. And it just gets more and more frenetic, and you just feel like it's going to, you know, explode.
Well, that's interesting. The In Spirit, or There in Spirit, excuse me, that track, I feel like it's there's a little bit of trolling there at the start where I feel like it's that sort of phone dying sound. Is that correct? Or is it Bluetooth disconnecting?
Right. Oh,
it's one
that,
of those.
Yeah.
It's one of those. But then I really loved how that sound, it's like a marimba sound or whatever it is, I don't know. It went right into, you know, it found its place right in the texture of the piece, which I thought was really kind of clever. Was that the intention, to have it be like a Bluetooth dying sound, or is that just me imagining things?
It wasn't, but I really love your interpretation of that. I mean, it makes me want to sneak in more little things like that. So people think they have to turn left or U-turn, or, you know, stuff like that. Every project I do is really different. And this project felt strangely like, maybe this sounds a little cheesy, but like almost like collaborations with these people who had recorded their voice. Because I wasn't really sampling it, but it did feel like working together in this strange way.
Well, awesome. Noah, this has been fantastic. Thanks for sharing all this insight about what you're doing. It helps, you know, as we're listening to this album, it just kind of helps us, you know, kind of conceptualize a little bit better, and also just, you know, learn a little bit more about your process. Before I let you go, where can we go to listen to this album, find out more about you? Where are the places we can go?
Probably just my website at noahwall.com. That has everything you need. The album is available on LP and cassette on Bandcamp.
Thanks to Noah Wall for sharing his time and his music with us. Please check out his new release on Chalkin Records entitled Speech Patterns. If you enjoyed this episode, please check out other episodes in the series. And as always, like, subscribe, or leave a comment on your preferred podcasting app. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and this has been The Process.